Would you like to share something you've heard on Issues Etc. via email, Facebook, Twitter, or text message? Well, we've made it easy for you. Just go to the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, and click Share This. You'll find almost 50 ways to share Issues Etc. audio. We love our on-demand listeners. Old Theology, New Technology, issuesetc.org. Go to the on-demand page and click Share This.
This is a shock for us because we was not expecting this kind of votation can happen in Switzerland. They are speaking about minaret, but in the reality, they are fighting against our life here and our faith.
It's a very strong signal of the civil society who says to Islam, you can come here, but in our country, religion is something of the private sphere, something individual.
That's the head of a Muslim interfaith organization in Geneva and the leadership of the Swiss People's Party talking about Sunday's vote in Switzerland to ban the construction of any more minarets. These are the towers that often are built around Islamic mosques from which go the call to prayer for Muslims wherever they live. In Switzerland, they said, look, no more minarets. It was a national referendum. The decision was made and there will be no more constructed. Is this a violation of the Muslims' religious freedom in Switzerland? I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Thanks for tuning us in on this Wednesday afternoon, the 2nd of December. We'll spend the first half hour talking with Dr. John Warwick Montgomery about two issues: this vote in Switzerland to ban the building of further minarets and Muslims stoning the devil. It's an interesting little practice they have. Then, a little bit later, we'll talk with Scott Klusendorf about federal funding of 13 new embryonic stem cell lines just announced today. And Wendy Wright of Concerned Women for America will be our guest. We'll talk with her about the battle in the Senate and a bipartisan amendment in the Senate attached to the health care reform there that would ban federal funding of abortion, a twin to the amendment that passed in the House several weeks ago. It's Wednesday afternoon, December the 2nd. Our call-in number for the next hour, 1-877-623-6943. 877-623-MY-I-E. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org, or Twitter us at issuesetc. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is Professor Emeritus at the University of Bedfordshire in England. He's a French advocate, a barrister at law in England and Wales, a member of the bar of the Supreme Court of the United States. He's Distinguished Professor of Philosophy and Christian Thought at Patrick Henry College in Purcellville, Virginia. He's authored and edited more than 50 books, including Faith Founded on Fact. Dr. Montgomery, welcome back.
Hello, hello.
You are a human rights lawyer of some experience. Do you think that the Muslims are having their religious freedom infringed upon with this vote to ban the building of further minarets?
Well, they probably are. The European Convention on Human Rights, the European Human Rights Treaty, guarantees the right to maintain one's religious practices. And the minaret is really the Muslim equivalent of a church tower. And so to tell them that they can't put up minarets is probably not going to be possible. The interesting thing about this, though, is the Swiss. People living in the United States generally think of Switzerland as a place for what? Swiss cheese? And a place to take a winter vacation, the Alps, that sort of thing. They don't realize how very, very ingrown and conservative the Swiss are. Switzerland is made up of a fair number of little mini states called cantons. And some of these are just to the right of Genghis Khan in their conservatism. Often they can't stand each other. For example, one of them has a motto, "We are like a pearl on a dunghill." The dunghill apparently referring to all of the other cantons. And the Swiss are very, very conservative in all respects. For example, this will appear unbelievable to the radio audience, maybe to you personally. the women of Switzerland did not receive the right to vote until 1971. Prior to 1971, women did not have the vote in Switzerland. And the Swiss have been putting up with a great deal of immigration in recent years. And obviously, they are sick and tired of the Muslim immigrants, and they have a much higher birth rate than other people. And so this is a real problem. But the difficulty here is that you can't, first of all, allow people into your country and then limit their religious activity. The way to solve this problem is not to let them in the first place. And one can certainly restrict immigration. But the Swiss have not done this, and now they're confronted with this problem.
All right. So in effect, I'm trying to draw a parallel here that I can understand. Would it be similar if a municipality said, look, you Christians can go ahead and worship as you please, but if your buildings involve these steeples or towers, you can't build any more churches?
Yes. Yes, that's exactly the situation. It's possible for local regulations on construction to limit certain kinds of buildings. For example, in Paris, up until recent years, no building was able to be built higher than the Eiffel Tower. And there are regulations that, for aesthetic reasons, have limited building operations. But where this is being done across the board to the buildings of a certain religious position, it runs into gigantic difficulties from a human rights standpoint. All of us, if we have any sense, should be very much worried about Muslim immigration and the Muslim birth rate. But if this is a genuine problem, and I think it is, one has to try to arrive at an intelligent and legal way of dealing with it. And the way to do this is to recognize that by national law, no one who is not a citizen of a country has the right to enter the country. This is always a matter of national law, and therefore, if a country is disturbed about this sort of thing, all they have to do is to close the doors. They can close the doors on people maintaining a particular political or religious position simply on the ground that that position is dangerous to the nation. And if we're allowed to prevail, it would change the very nature of the country. But unfortunately, legislators are pusillanimous when it comes to a solution like that. They're willing to allow workers in to handle untrained positions, and they deal with an economic problem without thinking in long term. And then they end up in a difficulty like this. This is not peculiar to Switzerland at all. If the U.S. isn't careful, the same sort of thing can happen here.
I'm wondering whether or not the horse has long ago left the barn when it comes to Western Europe and Muslim immigration. If not in Switzerland, then elsewhere in Western Europe, the population there, you get to the point where you can hardly call it immigrant anymore when it reaches the kind of percentages that people expect it to reach within the next 25 years.
Well, this is true, and unfortunately, the countries which are the most relaxed in terms of the maintenance of civil liberties and personal freedom are the countries that have been the least careful in this regard. The United Kingdom has opened its doors to this sort of thing, and it's going to be an exceedingly unfortunate situation within the next generation, particularly with low attendance at Anglican churches, the state church, and the increase in the number of Muslims from the Indian subcontinent and so forth. When we lived in England for a period of a decade or so, one of the frustrating things was to find that when you went to the hospital, even for something routine, lo and behold, invariably there would be doctors from Pakistan or Bangladesh, and these people could hardly handle English. I mean, their medical knowledge was probably all right, but it was very difficult to communicate with them. And you don't want to have the values of your nation disappear, be swallowed up as a result of that sort of thing. The French are much better about this, and the French have had a particular difficulty because their former colonies were in North Africa, and those areas are primarily Muslim. So they've had a lot of Muslim immigration, but their solution to this is to insist that the immigrant be absorbed into French culture. There is a language requirement for immigration now in France. It's not awfully severe, but it eliminates these situations where people come in and they can't speak the language.
So, in a nutshell, do you consider the decision by the Swiss to ban the further construction of Islamic minarets good or bad legally?
Well, it's bad legally, it simply tells us more about the Swiss than it does about the general Muslim problem, and it reminds us of the fact that we have to use our heads to deal with a problem like this, and not engage in solutions that may be worse than the disease.
Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is our guest. We'll have him for another 10 minutes on the other side of this break. It's Wednesday afternoon, December the 2nd. We're talking about the Swiss voting to ban the building of further minarets around Islamic mosques. When we come back, one more question on that, then we'll go on to Muslims casting stones at the devil. It's part of the Hajj, that is the pilgrimage required of Muslims at least once in their life. We'll find out what it's all about on the other side of the break. Then we'll spend some time with Scott Klusendorf talking about those 13 new embryonic stem cell lines that are now being paid for federally. And Wendy Wright will join us from Concerned Women for America to talk about the Senate debate over health care reform and funding for abortion. Stay tuned.
Here's a special offer for Issues Etc. listeners. For any size gift between now and the end of the year, we'll send you a CD of an Advent and Christmas sermon preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin. You can donate online at issuesetc.org. You can also donate by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois 62234. And for any size year-end gift, we'll send you a CD of Todd's Advent and Christmas sermons.
Here's a great resource for Sunday school teachers. Every Tuesday, we interview Deaconess Pam Nielsen of Concordia Publishing House about the upcoming Growing in Christ Sunday school lesson. You'll find these interviews under the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. Listen to a 20-minute interview with Pam Nielsen, and you'll be prepared to teach Sunday school this weekend. issuesetc.org. Click on demand and look for Teaching a Sunday School Lesson with Deaconess Pam Nielsen. Issues, etc. online at issuesetc.org.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers, you're listening to Issues, Etc.
International human rights attorney and law professor Dr. John Warwick Montgomery on the importance of Issues, Etc.
Before settling in England and France, I had my own Christian radio program for 10 years in California and 2 years in Washington State. I was also a regular for over a decade on national religious television. In a word, I have had a great deal of contact with evangelical programming, both good and bad, and my judgment in this area is probably worth something. In my opinion, Issues Etc. is one of the very few programs on Christian radio willing to discuss tough questions with solid theological answers. I consider it a great privilege to be able to appear on the program regularly, and I commend it to every serious listener.
You can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a tax-deductible gift today. Donate online at issuesetc.org, or you can donate by check. Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Defending the faith, teaching the truth. Issues Etc.
Welcome back. You're listening to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is our guest, Professor Emeritus at the University of Bedfordshire in England. He's a French advocate, a barrister at law in England and Wales, a member of the bar of the Supreme Court of the United States. He serves as Distinguished Professor of Philosophy and Christian Thought at Patrick Henry College of Purcellville, Virginia. He's author and edited more than 50 books, including Faith Founded on Fact, and he's also director of the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights, held annually in Strasbourg, France. Dr. Montgomery, tell us a little bit about what is unique about this annual academy.
Well, it's really the only Institute of Advanced Studies in Apologetics anywhere, and the faculty are drawn from an advisory board consisting of the very best defenders of the faith anywhere in the world. As a matter of fact, for this coming July session, there are only two places left out of the 20. We don't take more than 20 people each summer. And so if there are listeners who are perhaps thinking about this, the time has come to stop thinking and to start registering just as fast as possible. And we would strongly recommend that any listener who is thinking of the possibility of spending 2 weeks in the French Rhineland with Dr. Jean Edward Veith and myself and Craig Parton and two specialists in Germany dealing with Islam from a Christian standpoint and with a Reformation defense of the faith, they should get in touch with us immediately, if not sooner. It's possible simply to send me an email at jwmontgomery@compuserve.com, compuserve.com, and we'll hold a place, but this would have to be done very quickly.
Folks, you can find out more about the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights, held annually in Strasbourg, France, under the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. One more question on the European front when it comes to Islam, and that is, given what you have said already about the infringement upon religious liberty there by the Swiss vote, on the other side of the coin, talk, if you would, about the threat, if there is one, that Islam presents in Western Europe to religious liberty and to other basic human rights.
Well, if I had any influence on immigration policy, what I would do is to argue that Islam is a very special case as far as a religion is concerned, because Islam is a total worldview which is not just presenting a religious position among others in a society and leaving it up to people to determine how they should make their religious decisions. It happens to be a totalitarian system which, if it gains control, will prevent other people from exercising religious liberties and would go against the civil liberties guaranteed by the European Convention of Human Rights. Therefore, I would argue that immigration of Muslims should be radically reduced. The burden of proof should be on the Muslim to show that he does not go along with traditional Islamic intolerance toward other religious positions. And if he cannot show this, you don't let him in. In other words, I think a case could be made against Islamic immigration on the basis of the nature of Islam. But because of our confusion of tolerance with indifference to issues like this, no government has been willing to take that position. But only by taking it, it seems to me, would it be possible to restrict Muslims from absorbing cultures while at the same time allowing people of other religious beliefs to enter a society on the basis of ordinary immigration policies.
I read the headline, Muslims Worldwide Stone the Devil, part of the Hajj. Why do Muslims stone the devil?
Well, it's a traditional Muslim practice, very much like praying in the direction of Mecca a certain number of times per day. There are traditional practices of this kind which really are part of the sociological scene within Islam. What they do is to cement the individual to an Islamic worldview through actions that in themselves don't have a great deal of significance. I mean, this the pilgrimage is not as much a religious thing as it is a social affair. You know, to one of the pillars of Islam is that one must do a pilgrimage to Mecca once in one's lifetime. And these pilgrimages are often very largely of a secular character. Islam is a position which holds to absolute predestination and to a works righteous approach to salvation. And if you combine predestination and works righteousness, you end up with people who are going through the motions religiously, but for whom the religion doesn't change them. Their hearts are not changed. You can see this in the Near East, for example, where Muslims, if they're not around other Muslims, will drink and engage in various forms of conduct, which are certainly against proper Muslim beliefs. It is a messy religion in lots of ways. I mean, we have nothing against, I suppose, throwing rocks to the devil. Wasn't it Luther who allegedly threw an inkwell at the devil there at the Wartburg Castle? But you've got to understand who the devil really is, and to do that, you've got to have an understanding of what is genuine revelation from God. It's not the Quran. There's no evidence of that whatsoever. It is, however, Holy Scripture, and there we learn who the devil really is. And one of the devil's worst techniques is to try to get people to think that they can save themselves through religious belief. Not so. You can only be saved by recognizing that you can't save yourself and that you've got to go to the cross of Jesus Christ to receive the grace that he provides.
So sounds like the devil's, the Islam, Islamic religion may require that the Muslims stone the devil one day a year, but also require the same Muslim to believe, in essence, the devil's lies about saving oneself.
Well, that's quite right. This just goes to show that we've got to be sophisticated and not go along with terminology that sounds good on the surface. The idea of stoning the devil, that phrase, sounds awfully good, but this, whenever one hears another person talk about his religious position or her religious position, we always need to determine what they really mean by the terms that they're using. For example, in America, practically everybody has nice things to say about Jesus. Whom do they really think Jesus is supposed to represent? Is he just a moral teacher, or does the person who speaks about Jesus realize that this is God Almighty, come to earth to die for the sins of the world? God was in Christ, reconciling the world unto himself. When we're witnessing to non-Christians, we need to ask them what they mean by their terminology and not simply be deceived by the fact that the terminology sounds good.
Finally, then, with only 1 minute, contrast, if you would, how Christianity views the devil and issues like temptation with the views held by Islam. About 1 minute here.
Well, in the case of Islam, the devil is the force which represents anything contrary to Islam. And so one becomes a servant of the devil when one refuses to accept Islam. In the case of Christianity, the devil is not seen primarily as representing everything other than Christianity. The devil is seen as an angel who wanted to elevate himself to the level of God, and who therefore fell, and whose purpose now is to increase his kingdom. And his kingdom is increased by persuading people that they can save themselves. C.S. Lewis has a lot of good stuff along this line, and I recommend it to the listeners of Issues, Etc. The way to deal with the devil, according to Luther, is by way of the word. One little word shall fell him, and that word is the living Christ, and the written word, the Holy Scriptures.
Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is Professor Emeritus at the University of Bedfordshire in England, a French advocate, a barrister at law in England and Wales, a member of the bar of the Supreme Court of the United States, Distinguished Professor of Philosophy and Christian Thought at Patrick Henry College in Purcellville, Virginia, author and editor of more than 50 books, including Faith Founded on Fact. Dr. Montgomery, thank you for being our guest.
You're most welcome.
When we come back, we'll have the second part of this hour. We'll spend the first part of it with Scott Klusendorf. We need a little update because the headlines read, more stem cells get okay for government funding. This is more of the same, and yet there's a twist in there. The ban that was put, or the limitation that was put on federal funding for embryonic stem cell research back in August of 2001, I believe, by then-President George Bush, was lifted, amended a bit by President Barack Obama early after his election. And now 13 more lines of stem cells are available, federally funded. We'll see what Scott Klusendorf has to say to that. Then we'll talk about the Senate debate over health care reform and federal funding for abortion. Wendy Wright of Concerned Women for America will be our guest.
I attended Sunday services in a beautiful Singapore Lutheran congregation. One local man approached me and asked with a pronounced Southeast Asian accent, "You live in St. Louis? You know Todd Wilkin?"
Pastor Matt Harrison reading from his new audiobook, Christ Have Mercy, How to Put Your Faith in Action.
Who? You mean Todd Wilkin? It turned out this man, half a world away, was a regular listener via the internet, and he's hardly alone. It really is a whole new day. We are witnessing the greatest free flow of faithfully Lutheran information in the history of the Lutheran Church. It is the worldwide moment for confessional Lutheranism. It is Missouri's moment.
You can download Christ Have Mercy by Pastor Matt Harrison at cph.org. It costs only $10.99 to download. This new audiobook is a must-listen for Issues Etc. fans. Christ Have Mercy by Pastor Matt Harrison, cph.org.
Delivering apologetics artillery right on target. You're listening to Issues Etc.
One woman's abortion addiction draws attention to a more widespread problem.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
In a book entitled Impossible Motherhood, Irene Villar says she was an abortion addict and claims to have had 15 abortions. Such a story is tragic not only for the woman involved, but according to Tom McCluskey of the Family Research Council, it also shows the failure of the abortion industry, highlighting what little counseling they do for women after one abortion, let alone multiple. And, he says, the pro-life movement must fill that void by creating programs such as Silent No More to counsel post-abortive women.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.